Good evening, everybody. It is 6 o'clock, so I think we should make a start. Welcome to Rydale District Council planning meeting held this evening on the 26th of November. A few housekeeping matters. If the fire alarm goes off, it will be for real, and you should leave by the exit on your left if you sat in the public gallery, or on the doors behind me to my right and assemble in the car park. Conveniences are located in the corridor, where you will also find a coffee machine and drinking water. We have a number of speakers this evening. We have a number of speakers this evening, and each speaker has 3 minutes to present their case, and I will warn you when you've got 30 seconds left. I need to ask members of the public to make sure their mobile phones are switched off, and will members please confirm if they have a copy of the agenda. Okay, thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Councillor Riby, we haven't had an apology from either Councillor Burr or Councillor Andrews, so you're not able to substitute tonight at the meeting. I'm sorry about that, I did leave a message for you mid-afternoon when I'd heard you'd sort the agenda papers, so I think you'll find you've got a message on your answer phone, but I'm sorry we didn't get an apology from either of your group members.
Thank you. Sorry, Tony. Apologies for absence, please.
No apologies have been received.
Thank you very much. Members' declarations of interest. Does anyone have any declarations? Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Item 7, I've been lobbied. It's personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary.
Councillor.
Yeah, likewise, Chairman. Item number 7, and it's personal, non-prejudicial. Thank you.
Thank you, members. If we can go to page 3 on your agenda, which is the minutes of the last meeting. Does anybody have anything that is contrary to those minutes? If so, please say so. Otherwise, please could they be moved and seconded? Councillor Cleary.
I move them, Madam Chairman.
Councillor Potter. Thank you. Your vote for those minutes, please. Somebody just check they've voted for me, please, or if you weren't here, if they've abstained. Thank you. That's 7-4 and one abstention. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is urgent business, and I have no urgent business, so if I go on to item 5, which is the schedule of items to be determined, and move on to item 6, which is on page 10 of your agenda, members. So this is application number 19/01002/M full, and it's Persimmon Homes Teesside for the erection of 46 four-bedroom dwellings, 67 three, 32 two-bedroom and 16 one-bedroom, with associated access garden, garaging infrastructure and landscape, and that's land south of Firthland Road in Pickering, and I'll pass over to Mr. Housden.
Thank you, Chairman. As you'll see also from the description, this is a revised scheme further to a refusal which was referenced in 2017 but dated August last year. As you can see from the detailed officer report, Chairman, there are seven reasons for refusal in relation to this application, ranging from matters of principle to matters of detail. We were somewhat surprised to see this application come in after we'd recently adopted the sites document so recently, but nevertheless that's where we are. And I don't think there's really an awful lot more I can add to the report, Chairman, other than to say that there were some detailed reasons for refusal which, had the principle not been at issue, we would have negotiated to resolve, such as the proximity of dwellings to the eastern site boundary, such as perhaps the access loop road issue, the noise bund, which doesn't go far enough to address noise issues. All of those really were matters of detail, Chairman. But as members will see, underpinning and underlying all that were some rather more fundamental issues relating to the principle of development as set out in reason number one of the decision notice, as we're recommending it. Which is essentially that the site is not allocated for residential use in the development plan, and that it would be a departure from the development plan, and that we felt there were no benefits as material considerations which would identify that harm, raising issues of non-compliance with the local plan strategy and also the sites document, which you've just referred to. I do have some photographs, Chairman, just to hopefully refresh members who will have seen the site before, perhaps been to the site, or new members. In essence, Chairman, this total application is on land primarily to the south of an existing development that is being carried out by Persimmon, but for 52 dwellings off Firthlands Road, which was behind an area which was formerly occupied by I think ex-local authority house, garaging at one point in proceedings. This particular photograph is taken from the site offices, which are at an elevated level on the northern end of the site, facing southwards. So if you can picture these, what you see on the location plan, Chairman, there are some existing agricultural buildings on the application site, and those are located here. But from this direction, you're heading southwards, generally in the sort of Moulton Vale of Pickering direction. And panning around, you can see in the foreground the first of the first 50 dwellings that were in the process of being constructed here. They were granted planning permission some time ago now, Firthlands, obviously what you've got here is Firthlands Road to the further to the north, and then the adjacent existing sort of 70s development further to the east. And that's the detail of the layout, where we've got back-to-back distances that we think are too shallow, Chairman. Looking back this way, just in the background there, you can see the profile of some of the buildings and equipment on the McKechnie site. So this feature here is the acoustic bund that was shown on that first part of the site. It's actually shown on the application plans. This is the northern extent of it, and this is the southern extent of it. And you'll see from the submitted plans that the bund sort of peters out, and actually some of the development is beyond that bund, so it wouldn't be protected by the bund. So there was a detailed issue in terms of noise that is also featuring in one of the reasons for refusal. This is looking back across the site from the public right-of-way back towards an existing farm building which would be demolished as part of the scheme if it went ahead, and in the distance the existing built-up area of the town right on the eastern boundary. And this is panning back from that viewpoint back to Firthlands Road and some of the new houses at the northern end of the site here. So that's Firthlands Road, and this is the sort of later 70s development. This is a view about halfway across the site, looking eastwards. And this is closer up. This is the line of the last sort of hedgerow of any note that's on the site. You see from the officer report there are remnants of the strip field systems at this side of the town here. This is a gap in that hedgerow. So this is sort of facing southwards, and the development would come quite close to this eastern boundary with back-to-back distances of about 18 metres. And this is a view looking northwards from that same sort of hedgerow gap. And that view is taken, if members are looking at the location plan, there's a footpath and an emergency vehicular access on the north-eastern corner of the site onto Firthlands Road. But Chairman, the recommendation is, well, quite clear, Chairman, we're recommending refusal. As far as I'm aware, there are no speakers registered tonight.
Thank you very much. I'll open it up for questions from members, please. Councillor Potter, this is your area, I believe.
Thank you, Chair. Right. Let's get the positives done first. There are some very small, pokey, affordable houses. Right, that's that out of the way. Let's look at the negatives. Well, this would take Pickering well over and above the five-year land supply and any requirements of the local plan strategy. So, really, currently there's no identified need and no commensurate infrastructure provision. Compared to the previously refused scheme, there's the same number of houses, just more expensive large ones and reduced site amenity, which isn't really impressive. According to the officer's report, poor design standards regarding sizes of houses and rooms. So we've got pokey little houses, pokey little driveways that people have trouble turning on. The houses appear to be too tightly packed on the site. Insufficient amenity space. Drainage. Now then, I was interested in Yorkshire Water's comment that they're satisfied provided only the site's foul water utilises the public sewer. Which seems quite acceptable. It just seems a pity that they aren't quite so keen to separate sewage from surface water in the many combined sewers that cause problems everywhere else around Yorkshire and specifically around Pickering and Malton. I was brought to mind a comment from Pickering, Vale of Pickering IDB regarding the Whitby Road site. This is 2 years ago. And I'll quote, "The foul sewage network in Pickering is becoming increasingly under pressure with discharges of foul, untreated sewage into the IDB ditch network becoming more frequent. It's the board's opinion that substantial improvements need to be implemented by Yorkshire Water Authority to the existing treatment plant before any further major housing developments are granted permission." I did a little bit of digging after that, and to my knowledge, there's been no increase in capacity at the Pickering Sewage Works since about 1970s, and it could be before that. And there's been rather a lot of new development since then, including, of course, the ones at Whitby Road and a new hotel on the way, so it doesn't work very well there. It's clearly damaging to the medieval strip and field systems, and there's quite a lot in the report from the officer on that. No doubt this will be conveniently forgotten in future local plans when building land's needed, but at the moment it still seems to be relevant. It's too close to Rosties with potential noise and air quality problems. There's no reference to renewables or high insulation standards. And apart from that, it's just completely uninspiring. So I'm quite happy to move the officer's recommendation of refusal. Thank you.
I'm going to second that briefly. I won't repeat what my friend across the way has said, other than to repeat what our officer has said, that it departs from the plan in principle and detail and comes after the site's document. It has nothing much to commend it. I'm going to second a refusal.
Sorry, Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chair. I mean, what I find absolutely astonishing is the fact that I think it's about 150 or more houses from a single access road with no other access for an emergency vehicles. And I think that's quite appalling, to be honest.
Any other comments, members? On the basis that it's been moved and seconded for refusal, may I ask you to go to the votes, please? Thank you, members. That's 9 votes for refusal. Thank you. Thank you, members. If we can move on to item 7, which is on page 86 of your agenda. It's application number 19/00688/full. And it's for the extension of an existing garden cottage pavilion to form private self-contained retirement accommodation with living care, and that's the Great Barn Cottage, Village Street, Howsham. And I think, is it Alan that's doing this? Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Chair. As stated in the report, the application is recommended for refusal for 2 reasons. It's reported to Planning Committee for determination on the basis that there is a representation in support of the application. I'll just run through a number of slides showing the site and surrounding area. First of all, an aerial photo of the northern end of Howsham, just to highlight the application site. Is the is referred to as the Garden Cottage or the Garden Cottage Pavilion, and it's associated with the Great Barn, which is a substantial residential property, and it stands within its curtilage. Off to the northwest is Howsham Hall, the Grade 1 listed building, and this northern part of the village is within open countryside outside development limits, within the village conservation area, the area of outstanding natural beauty, and also the registered park and garden associated with Howsham Hall. And as referred to within the report, there are elements of the site which are considered to be non-designated heritage assets. So also just to note is another property to the west, the cottage, which does fall within the applicant's ownership. Just a more zoomed in version of that aerial photo, just to show the 2 general positions of the extensions off the southwest side of the existing building, and this is referred to as the living wing of the building, and also to the north and east of the building, where there would be a bedroom wing. The existing building is single storey, approximately 70 square metres in size, and contains a living space, a kitchen and a bathroom, and also a storage area. It does stand within a walled garden. It's open on the western side with direct access to the tennis court. But the historic gardens that are referred to within the report and covered by the Building Conservation Officer's response include these walls here, and it also potentially thought to be the walls along the eastern side. So, photographs of the site. This is taken from the lane that that runs to the south of the application site. It's a private road. On the left hand side is the cottage, which was shown in the aerial photo. This is further along that lane, and this is showing the southern side of the existing garden cottage and part of the wall that encloses the garden to the west. So in this area, I'll show on an elevation later in the presentation, along here there would be 4 window openings, and the ridge height of the extension would be a continuation of the existing heading out in a southwest direction. So panning round, this is to the this is the eastern elevation of the existing building. This corner of the building here would remain as is. There would be additional windows inserted here. At the northern end of this side of the building, it would be stepped out in this area here, approximately 2.7 metres. And this photo's taken facing south. This is the northern elevation of the garden cottage, where it links to the garden walls. In this area, the extension would be stepped northward by approximately 6 metres, 6.5 metres, and stepped out towards the left of this photo, 2.7 metres. So it's a wraparound extension, roughly L-shaped, to form the bedroom wing of the building. This is a photo of a close-up of the historic wall. The northern extension would include this. This would become an internal wall, and there would be a window in here, and there would also be a window just off to the left facing back onto the garden. So this is taken facing south into the enclosed garden to the west of the garden cottage. So this is the historic garden wall, and again that's where one of the bedroom windows would be inserted in that wall there. And this is facing back in the opposite direction, facing north, where you can just see the historic garden walls here. And panning round in a sort of northeasterly direction, this is the existing garden cottage. So there would be a window inserted here to serve the master bedroom. Panning round, there would be no changes to this west-facing elevation. This would remain in this area, it would remain as it is. But panning round to the south, where the stores are currently, the extension would come off in a southwesterly direction here. And this is referred to as the living wing. Again, just facing towards where that southern extension would be in this area here. This is taken from within the garden facing west towards the tennis court. So just to illustrate the extent of the proposed extensions, the darker lines on this floor plan outline the existing garden cottage here, and the overlay, the sort of the grey faded, is the proposed extension, the wraparound extension on the northern side, and the extension that projects off the southwest. Again, this is just a comparative comparison between the existing floor plan at the top of that slide and the proposed extensions at the bottom there. So you can see existing building roughly 70 square metres. Extensions would treble the size of the building, 90 square metres roughly, and 50 square metres on this side. So it's a significant extensions to the existing building. Again, just a comparison, at the top of this slide is the existing western elevation of the garden cottage. So as shown in the photos at the top there, and this is the proposal with the northern wing here, with the window in the garden wall, and also the southern wing here, which also replicates the hexagonal roof form that exists at present. And finally, this is on the southern elevation. Again, this is an elevation as existing, as shown in the photograph taken from the lane. This is the wall without any openings as it stands, and the proposal to extend to follow the existing ridge line and the addition of windows along this wing. And also, it's not displayed very well on the slide, but you can also see the northern extension where it steps out here on the plans that are attached to the report on the agenda. So, moving to the report itself, there's no updates to the report as published. A full copy of the Building Conservation Officer's response was circulated with the late pages. The existing garden cottage amounts to 70 square metres and is considered a relatively modest, inward-looking and well-proportioned building that is subservient to the main dwelling, the Great Barn. Albeit in design terms, the roof form and window openings are considered incongruous within this locality. As highlighted in the report, the site is within an area of high environmental quality. The Great Barn and the historic walls are considered to be non-designated heritage assets and stand within the conservation area, which is a designated heritage asset. The MPPF and policies, local policies SP16 and SP20 require good design. The proposed increase in the size of the building through the addition of two wings and the change in form and insertion of windows in outward-facing walls would lead to a significant change in the character of the building so that it is domestic in appearance. The proposed scale, mass and form of the extensions and the different roof types and proposed window openings are considered to be not in keeping and not sympathetic to the host building. The remains of the historic garden walls are regarded as non-designated heritage assets. The proposed alterations and windows punctured in those walls result in the loss of definition of this historic feature. The extensions, which are described by the Building Conservation Officer as overdevelopment, would treble the existing footprint, and the result would be a building of significant size that would disrupt the hierarchy of buildings and space in this part of the conservation area. In conclusion, it's acknowledged that the applicant has submitted a petition signed by a number of people from the village who support the application. However, for the two reasons set out in the report, the proposal conflicts with policies SP12, SP16 and SP20 of the local plan, and there are no compelling arguments or material considerations of sufficient weight to justify a departure from the development plan. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Before we go to the local member, we have two speakers this evening. The first speaker is Mr. Salmon. If Mr. Salmon would like to come forward to the chair, it's the large button at the bottom of the unit, and you have 3 minutes, Mr. Salmon, to present your case, and I will remind you at 30 seconds that you've got 30 seconds left.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for permitting me to address this meeting. Back in July this year, I wrote a letter supporting this application, and I hope that you have all had the opportunity to familiarise yourselves with its content. I believe that it is listed as document number 1972784. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Howsham, Howsham is a small village or hamlet in the south of Rydale and is comprised of 35 residential properties and approximately 60 adult residents. There are also approximately a dozen farms and properties that are located away from the main nucleus of the village. It is an eclectic mix of properties, and unbelievably, up until about 35 years ago, at least 25% of the properties in Howsham were derelict. Some were even the subject of demolition orders. The size of properties in the village range between single-bedroomed, period stone-built terraced cottages and Howsham Hall, a substantial house, part dating back to the Jacobean period with latter extensions. The properties are all shapes and sizes, and many are stone-built, some dating back several centuries. Over time, all have undergone various degrees of renovation, adaptation, extension and upgrading to provide the current residents with accommodation that meets the requirements of modern day living. Additional properties in the village have gradually been built and developed over time. It is this ongoing evolution that has transformed the village into one that merits its relatively recent designation as a conservation area. The proposed development is just another step along the path of the village's evolution. I find that the proposal is honest and upfront as it sets out what the applicant wishes to achieve, rather than the alternative of presenting a series of applications to add smaller extensions to the property over a period of time.
30 seconds.
The population of Howsam is not large enough to justify a parish council. Instead, 43 out of 60 residents have signed a petition supporting the application. This, coupled with the fact that no letters of objection have been received from the remaining residents, provide a clear directive from the village that this application should be wholeheartedly supported by all concerned. It is important that the wishes of the local community are seriously taken into consideration during this democratic process. Therefore, on behalf of the residents of Howsham, I respectively ask this meeting to find a way of approving the applicant's proposal in accordance with the mandate provided by the village. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. The second speaker is Mr. Stevenson. Mr. Stevenson, would you like to come forward? And it's the large button at the bottom, sir. You've 3 minutes, and I'll remind you at 30 seconds.
That one, live now, thank you. I'm ready to go. Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is James Stevenson. I would wish members to consider the following points. I'm 80 years old and my wife somewhat younger, and I'm looking to retire from full-time work and downsize from the family home we created 40 years ago at the Great Barn, designed by one of Yorkshire's finest architects, Francis Johnson. My son has two children, and Howsham is the main homestead for his livestock and firewood businesses. This change, however, would allow him to move into the Great Barn. In terms of planning policy, whilst we accept and respect the Building Conservation Officer is entitled to her opinion, the two reasons given for refusal, in our view, are entirely a matter of subjective judgment. However, we believe that our application is supported by the Government's National Planning Policy Framework, which allows for new dwellings essential for agriculture in the countryside. In addition, NPPF Para 78 instructs us to promote sustainable development in rural areas. Housing should be located where it will enhance or maintain the vitality of rural communities. Planning policies should identify opportunities for villages to grow. In terms of local planning policy, the proposed site is within the AONB and within the Grade 2 registered park and garden of Howsham Hall, but neither the Great Barn nor the Pavilion are listed. There have been no objections raised by any official consultees or indeed by local residents. Paul Jackson, the AONB manager, recommended a condition that the Pavilion should not be sold away from the Great Barn, which we accept. Highways and Historic England had no comment whatever. The Yorkshire Gardens Trust, who comment on any development in registered park and gardens, have stated that the proposal should have very little impact on the wider registered park and garden. In terms of scale and design, the proposed extension remains true to the architectural language of the Great Barn and Pavilion. The proposal is a two-bedroom bungalow with the necessary provision for live-in care commensurate to our requirements. The bedrooms have been discreetly positioned behind the existing garden wall, as requested by the Conservation Officer. We have provided two windows in the garden wall, but there are already five other openings in the same wall in the existing pavilion. From a village of 33 dwellings, we have a petition of support signed by the 43 residents, and we had a public consultation evening supported by all who came. In summary, a positive decision by members tonight will allow us to retire in the village where we have lived for 40 years and at the same time provide succession on the farm. We believe a site visit might help members to assess the special circumstances and the validity of this application. I thank you.
Chairman, yeah, there's just one point that the last speaker made a comment, I believe, in relation to the agricultural aspects of it, which hasn't been something that's been put forward with the application, that it was required in an agricultural sense. I think the the understanding of officers that's been put forward as a response to the changing family circumstances and age and need for living care, which of course officers understand, and I think as members will have seen from the committee report that, you know, I think there was some pre-application discussion as well prior to the submission of this formal application. I think having said that, clearly we have to balance the competing needs here, and it's rare that I find myself as a head of planning seeing such a strongly worded response to an application from the conservation officer. Prior to tonight's meeting, I did take the opportunity to go down to the site yesterday to fully appreciate the circumstances. Obviously, we all know where Howsham Hall is, but if you're not going down there, you're not going to drive down it because it's not a through road. I think I'm certainly intrigued just to find out a little bit more about the agricultural comments that have just come out of the last speaker's words, but also note that the last speaker has made reference to a site inspection, Chairman, by this meeting, and I'm not sure if that I'm looking now across at the local member to see what his views are, but I'll just leave that in the air whilst members think about that.
I'll open it up to questions from members first, and then we'll come to the local member when we've done questions. Councillor Andrews.
Chair, when was the development limit around Howsham last revised?
The development limits were last agreed with the site's document.
I'm talking about the. I'm not talking about this site's visit. I'm talking about the existing development limits, which have existed for a very long time before the site document. When were they last revised?
Well, some of the site development limits were revised with the site's document. That's what I'm saying to you. That's the up-to-date development plan. I think what Councillor Andrews is trying to get at is, did the site's document amend the development limits were in the 2002 plan? And the answer to that is no, it didn't, as it didn't for around about 90-odd other settlements in Rydale, because it didn't take account of any. The new site development limits take account of allocations.
So it didn't then amend the limit that was set in the 1996 plan? Was it 1996?
That's before my time, Councillor Andrews. Sorry, I can take you back to 2002, not any further forward than that. I mean, it's not unusual to think that the site's development limits won't have changed because the built-up area of the line of houses in Howsham as you go down the road pretty much stops at the junction or where you bend down away from the junction to the entrance to the hall. So that's where it logically stops. And at that point, you're into the historic park and garden and the AOMB, as shown on the plans.
Any other questions? Okay, on that basis, I'll go to the local members, with Councillor Cleary and Councillor Graham.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Can I start by thanking you and the planning officer for agreeing to allow this item to come to committee. Before tonight, I was all ready and fired up for supporting this and moving acceptance of this application. Looking at the report, the sticking point seems to be two items, the scale, small number of items, the scale. Well, it is still relatively modest in comparison to the curtilage and the host building, as it's described, which is entirely subservient to and in close proximity to. And the next item seems to be the treatment of the walls, the historic walls. There seems to be some doubt as to how far the historic walls extend. However, they are described as purely vestigial. What's left is a very small part of what is thought to be the historic garden wall. And thirdly, the item of the design. Well, I think it does echo, however incongruous the design might be when you're up against it, it does echo the existing garden house pavilion. The report says, I think I don't wish to repeat what the applicant has said, with the exception of the building conservation officer, there are no objections. And I think if there had been any objections from Yorkshire, Historic England or the Yorkshire Gardeners Trust, it might strengthen the objection. However, there aren't. In view of what the planning officer said, the applicant has said, and a number of my friends are around either side of me, and I'm looking over that way, there seems to be a consensus that it would benefit members to actually visit the site just to appreciate how little effect this development would have on the surroundings. The planning officer does say there are no clear and close public views. It is a secluded position. And it is, it's slightly ambiguous insofar as it says it's an additional domestication of the site. Well, the site is entirely domestic anyway. It is a garden. It is a domestic site, so I can't quite see that. However, in light of what the applicant has suggested and Mr. Housden has suggested, and at least two of my colleagues here, I will move that we defer for a site visit. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Do you want to Mr. Housden, you wanted to come back on the comment?
It was just really on a point of what we're required to do in terms of duties, I suppose. And I think that there are duties that are imposed on us by the AOMB location. I mean, just in response to what you said there, and it's clear that I think the Gardens Trust and the AOMB officer have made no adverse reaction in terms of wider landscape impact in AOMB terms. The other duty, however, that you do have is in relation to the conservation area designation, and that is having to assess the duty to decide whether something enhances or preserves the character of an area. And that isn't necessarily relating to something it's in a public domain, it's the extent of the area. And so that's why I think, following on from what the applicant said tonight, an assessment of the site context is probably a very useful way of exercising that duty, because if you haven't, then that's what makes decisions sometimes challengeable.
Thank you. Councillor Cleary, you want to come back?
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. There's something, I think, thank you for that discussion. I think the building officer does suggest that it's a balanced judgment in regard to the scale of any harm or loss and the significance of the heritage asset. I wasn't aware that the applicant would be suggesting that it was necessary for agriculture, and I think that's out of this application. That's not what the application is about. However, this committee has been sympathetic, I would suggest, to the idea that applicants should be able to stay in their own properties and allow the family to maintain the property. And I think this, although it's not part of the local plan at the moment, I suggest that with the review coming up, it might be something that would be addressed. So forgive me for sort of going outside the plan for a moment, but I think socially this maintains a family unit in a farming context and a rural context. The rural context is something that this committee is supportive of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Cleary. Given the importance of this application to the applicants, the fact that we've got a suggestion that it's recommended for refusal, I do think it is important we have a site visit. We have a number of new members on the committee, and I think it's beneficial to go down and have a look and understand what's being asked for. So I'm very happy to second the proposal for a site visit. On that basis, members, I'll put it to you that we have a site visit and this item is deferred until that's happened. If you could go to the vote, that would be most helpful. Thank you. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. There will be a site visit and we'll arrange a date and time at the end of the meeting to suit everybody, if that's possible. Thank you. Members, if we can move to item 8 on the agenda, which is on page 117. This is an application 19/00757/full. It's the Commercial Development Projects Limited, the erection of a petrol filling station and forecourt, shop, sales building, canopy, fuel pumps, HGV pumps, air bay, etc. And that's land off Eden House Road, Old Malton.
It is, yes. Thank you, Chairman. I'll try and be brief. I think we have a speaker registered. In essence, just like to draw attention, because I think one of the local or near local members did ask the question, are there any electric vehicle charging points? And the answer is yes, there are. There are two. But yes, there are two. In terms of other updates, you'll have noted from the committee report, Chairman, that we'd had two responses. One of them was from a Mr. Hill, who's the museum manager. And following the publication of the report, the manager has essentially reiterated the comments that he'd made in his initial letter. Was really expressing concern that the forecourt sales retail building would not incorporate a fast or convenience food restaurant, as it could result in an increase in litter and have a negative effect on the number of visitors using their own catering facilities. I think the only thing I would say to that, Chairman, is that clearly this is a facility aimed at the travelling motorist on the strategic route network, and the essence of that, I think, is to provide a variety of mechanisms by which people can buy fuel, rest up in their car, or alternatively go into this forecourt building and potentially sit at a table and have a coffee and a sandwich or something there. I don't really think it's a full-blooded fast food eatery, Chairman. The other point that's outstanding and remains outstanding are the final comments of the Lead Local Flood Authority. You'll have seen that on the agenda papers. The Lead Local Flood Authority had asked, had not objected to the application, but requested more information, which has been submitted and has been with the Lead Local Flood Authority for getting on for a fortnight, Chairman. And although I've chased them again today, I've not had their final comments. But having seen the information that's come in, which is in relation to micro drainage network calculations, surface water drainage calculations, and the drainage management maintenance and management plan, it's all there. So we're just waiting for the final comments from the Lead Local Flood Authority to sign that off, Chairman. So the recommendation tonight is authority to approve, subject to that clearance. In terms of the application site itself, the site is located. This is the new roundabout on the A169. So in the distance, you've got the A64, A169 roundabout on the road network. This is where the bus stop is on the Pickering side of the road, heading towards Norton. So you're coming from Pickering towards the new roundabout, and the site is actually in this area here, next to the recently constructed large industrial units that you can see from the A road. This is taken slightly nearer to the roundabout, so you can see where the traffic comes off the A64 roundabout here. And panning across, this is the site. The building, the access into the site is located off this arm of the roundabout, and traffic then circulates round into this area here. The forecourt building is located slightly further to the back of the site and is about 4.5 metres high at its highest point. By way of comparison, the eaves of that building are 8.1 metres high and the apex is 10.1 metres high. So the canopy, I would guess, is roughly about that height. So it's below the height of the white band on the building. And this is a closer up, sorry, it's a bit of a dark photograph, but this is from the new internal industrial estate road that links onto Eden House Road, and panning across. So the entrance would be somewhere in this area here, and the building would sit there with the canopy and the pumps slightly further out in this direction, but nothing any higher than that. And this is a view back from the Weiss House Junction. So if you're thinking of where Weiss House Lane is, This is heading looking north towards the new roundabout. I think that, well, you'd probably struggle to see the canopy, the actual building itself here above the line of the hedgerows. Might just see the top of it. The canopy would roughly be about that height. So again, it's slower in profile. We have suggested that the outer faces of the canopy should not be illuminated, so as to minimise light pollution. With that, Chairman, I don't think there are any more updates at this stage. If there are any questions from members, I'll try and answer them.
Thanks, Gary. We do have a speaker. Sorry, we've got a speaker this evening, Mr. Stoneyland. Would you like to come forward, Mr. Stoneyland? It's the large button at the bottom. You've got 3 minutes, and I'll give you a warning at 30 seconds remaining. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is David Stoneyland. I am a planning consultant from Freefs, representing the applicants Commercial Development Projects Limited. Full planning permission is sought for the erection of petrol filling station with forecourt shop and associated works. The application site is located to the north of Eden House Road and within a short distance from the A64. The application identifies that there is a lack of roadside facilities along this stretch of the A64. The closest existing petrol filling station to the east is approximately 9 miles away, and nearest to the west is approximately 11 miles away, so we're 20 miles apart. Your officers agree that the need for this petrol filling station is justified given the lack of other similar facilities on this strategic road network. The forecourt shop will sell convenience goods and is aimed at travelling motorists who will mainly stop to purchase fuel. The shop isn't a destination facility and will principally serve passing traffic along the A64. The proposal occupies a site which has been identified in part for employment uses, both through the development plan and through an earlier planning permission. Upon completion, the proposal will generate in the region of 20 jobs and is considered an employment-generating use. Furthermore, the proposal will not prejudice the employment opportunities in the wider locality. Comments from the Council's statutory consultees, including Highways, Heritage and Ecology, have been received, none of whom have raised any concerns. In conclusion, I respectfully ask that members support your officer's recommendation for approval and grant planning permission for this proposal. Thank you.
I'll open it up for questions now, please. Paul, Councillor Andrews.
Incidentally, Chair, I wasn't here when you asked for declarations of interest, but I am a member of Moulton Town Council, which has discussed this application. I'm also, I've also discussed it with friends, but not with the applicant, and so therefore it's a personal interest only. Can I just ask? Was this application, or the fact that there was an application which was likely to be recommended for permission, considered, or how was it considered, when it came to considering the application for this BP station in the middle of Norton?
This application was considered on its own merits, Councillor Andrews. It was submitted when it was.
Said, how was it considered? In how was the application for BP in the centre of Moulton considered when it was known that this application was going forward?
Application was submitted after the BP garage was submitted, Councillor Andrews. Well, that's neither here nor there. The decisions we made on the BP garage in Norton were made many, many months ago and were the subject of a recent appeal, the outcome of which is also on these agenda papers, Councillor Andrews. This application was submitted as a travelling motorist facility, which is not how the BP garage with its associated retail facility in Norton was submitted at Wellham Road. That facility is not aimed at intercepting passing traffic on the strategic route network. It's a different scheme.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions. These petrol filling stations seem to be something of an anomaly in terms of categorisation. So what SIL or any other planning game is attracted by these? The other one is in respect of lighting. and I was looking at the condition 11 on page 125. I'm just a bit concerned if this is an H24 facility, which it is, that it's going to be a massive beacon of light sort of sitting there, and is there likely to be any other limitation on the amount of light, because it's saying about the outer fascia, but I'd rather like to see that there was more control of the lighting, so that it was all sort of downwards and not shining outwards.
We have quite an amount of detail on the lighting that's been proposed on the site. I think the issue here is in terms of canopies. Petrol filling station canopies tend to be a beast in their own right if you don't set your stall out from the outset. And I think we can all probably think of filling stations that you can see for miles across, some of them across the Vale of Pickering, that tend to be bright colours. The intent of that is to acknowledge the fact that this is a 24-hour facility and needs to be evident as such and safe to move around. But those of you familiar with the new Vanguard development on the edge of York would potentially see something that's gone horribly wrong there with lighting that is visible and clearly excessive, which I don't believe to be the case here. It's not on all fours with that. But in essence, the essence of that condition was really aimed, which is the condition number 11, was really around the desires, shall we say, of the petrol filling station operators who wish to sometimes do more than just attract attention to the facility that's there. And without naming names, because I don't know who's coming here, but sometimes you can get a sign which will say the name of the outlet, but then the whole of the canopy is also illuminated, and that's the intention, to try and not have that happen here.
Well, I can only see that condition 11 that is any sort of restriction on the lighting, but is there a good lighting plan that makes sure it's not shining out?
Well, I think the other conditions relate to the plans and submitted information. So you've got a list of plans and documents that have been submitted with the application. That's what we would expect to happen.
What about the sill thing?
This won't attract sill. Our sill charging regime relates primarily to residential development. It does relate to retailing, but only at levels that are, you know, dealing with supermarket sort of levels of contribution, which this is nowhere near that size.
Any other questions? No. Right, I will pass this over. I think it's yours, Councillor Andrews, this local member.
I have to move for approval, Chair, but in doing so I'm going to express some serious concerns. Which we have here a second major petrol station, which has been brought to this committee, or rather it's been dealt with, because the other one was dealt with on appeal. Within a very short space of each other, when the appeal on the other one was being considered, it was known that this application was going forward, and this was a suitable alternative site. I personally cannot understand the need for having two major filling stations so close to each other. I could not understand the need to have a huge filling station as is required in Norton, and I am very, very concerned about the way these two applications have gone forward. Both have been granted, and when, in my opinion, only one should have been granted. But I accept the officer's advice. There is no way we can refuse this application. And in fact, it's a good idea to have a petrol station on the A64. I won't repeat what I've said on several occasions about drainage on this site, Chair. I won't bore you with all that again. I continue to be concerned by putting a retail element on that site. If not careful, we'll end up in a situation where the toe is in the door and we push it open and we end up with a full retail park there, which I hope that never happens. And if that did happen, it would be in full breach of policy. But as I say, Chair, I do move the application.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I'm very happy to second it, or I'm content to second this application. I would comment, though, that however geographically close this filling station is to the one in Norton, I think that in terms of time and effort to get between the two, they're a distance apart. And I think, as the applicant's agent has said, there are filling stations at Harton, at Pickering, and I think there's one at East Heslerton or West Heslerton. They are a distance apart. And I think there's another one in the middle of Moulton and another one in Norton. So they are a distance apart. And people not living in Moulton or Norton don't like... It's not sensible to have to drive a distance to get fuel. And you have to plan to do it and do it. But I think this is a good site for one. I would echo Councillor Potter's, I think it is a subject close to my heart as well, the subject of light, and that's something we can develop further in other applications. And as we review the local plan, that light is another form of pollution that isn't always dealt with. I'm content to second this application.
Just to draw members' attention on page 129 to the light, there is a lighting plan there. The idea of making sure that it's all very localised to the site, and it was something our environmental health officers were happy with, that information, and it's that part of that dark skies thing, really. But Councillor Potter was right to point it out that if you're not getting that right, you can end up with quite a lot of bright sky on the edge of the town. So that's a plan that has been submitted as part of the application.
I could make a small comment. I think it's probably a better site for a fuel destination for travellers on the A64 than anywhere else, and it might discourage people coming into the town for that fuel provision. So I think it's a good thing to be where it is. The lighting seems to be fairly low. Okay, I'd hate to see Las Vegas by Moulton. That would be my only comment. Members, it's been moved and seconded for approval. If we can go to the vote, please. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. Thank you, members. We're going to move to item 10, which is an enforcement report. There are some sensitive issues with it, and I would like it if we could please move into exempt. Councillor Cleary.
I move we're going to exempt.
What are the sensitive issues?
Sorry, on the agenda.
It's on the exempt papers. So.
Considering prosecution.
Chair, I have to say I don't understand because I don't really want to say this, Chair, but I don't see why the fact that you've
exempt.
Thank you, Councillor. It's been moved and seconded for approval, well, for exemption, if members would. Members, that's 8 votes for and 1 abstention. We are going to move into exempt.